Welcome to Inspired Artist Podcast with me, Sirgun Kaur. In this episode, I am talking with Narinjan Kaur, the beautiful sacred chant artist from the Kundalini and Sikh traditions. She is taking a little bit of time out of her family life to do this podcast. We got so perfectly interrupted by her two-year-old who wanted juice, and just to hear her talk about the thoughtful and spiritual concepts that were going through her mind at that moment while serving her two-year-old juice is exactly what you're going to appreciate about this this episode, among other things. So here we go.
Okay, hi.
Hi. All right. Well, I just noticed on Facebook, because Ram Dass posted it, that you did a concert. Was it last night with Sanatam?
The night before last.
The night before. Cool. Was that fun?
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah?
Yeah, it was great. It was really nice to, I mean, it was just one song. It wasn't the whole, she just had me on stage to just like sing one song, and I sang I Am.
And, you sang your own song. That's fun.
Yeah. And Ram Dass was there too. And like he and I kind of composed that song together. Like I wrote it, but then he and Matthew and I kind of did the composed all the like music around it and the way it flows and a lot of the chord progressions and stuff. So it was really nice to like, he's like the perfect person to play that song with anyway.
Yeah.
And so that was really, I haven't played with him in a long time. And so it was really lovely to play with him, and of course always lovely to sing with Sanatam. The space she creates on stage is so beautiful and just like heartfelt and expansive, and so just it's always lovely to be a part of that.
I sang some of her music for the Phoenix show that she did.
Nice.
And I agree with you that it was so nice just to sit there in her space.
Yeah.
Yeah. I loved it. So how long? Yeah. Sorry, did you want to say something else about that?
No, I just said that's great.
Yeah. It's obvious why she is a magnet to so many. When did you start making music with Ram Dass?
A long time ago. I mean, I remember we were like 13 or 14 when we did our first few things together. We would just like do music, sing music together, probably and then we like would just kind of, he would fiddle around in the studio and we would,
it was recording at 14.
I think he was a little older, maybe like 16 or something. And maybe we were, okay. I don't know, maybe we were, but we were young teenagers. And yeah, he was like learning. Yeah, he was recording and like messing around and learning at that age. Totally.
Wow. And so Were you living near each other?
No, just like at solstice time and stuff, like in New Mexico.
Okay, cool. And so then... Was there a long period between that time and when you guys made the first album you made together? Was which one?
Prem City.
Okay, was that a big gap between kind of playing together as teenagers and doing that, or was there a lot of exchange going on between that?
We've been just kind of playing together live, sort of. We had been playing together live intermittently. It was just kind of like here and there, you know. And sorry if you can hear my dog drinking in the background. He's drinking while he's a very loud, messy water drinker.
That's character. Yes, I don't think I really can, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, now he stopped. But it's like super loud. But we just kind of played together intermittently, and we've always just really, it's been easy, he and I playing together, and easy composing music, easy performing music, easy recording music, and it's always been really great and easy, even when it was like, because he produced my album Prem City, and we, you know, worked together on a lot of that music as well. And then when it came time for From Within was the next one after that, and that was with Matthew. And when Matthew came along, it was like the three of us actually worked together really well. And then Matthew and I did an album, and then, you know, and so just haven't really played much with him in the last few years, but it was nice the other night to just kind of check back in, and I'm like, gosh, we should do more together again.
Yeah, yeah. He's busy. Yeah.
He is very busy these days, yes.
Yeah. Great.
But we'll find, as am I, in the home life, and we'll find the time.
Yeah. So are you mostly baby these days?
Yeah, mostly baby. I mean, Bahadur just turned 2. And so, yeah, Bahadur, my younger son, is 2. And my older son, Gobind Singh, is 9.5. Mm-hmm. And then Michael, we have our dog, Michael, who's, you know, 3.5. I know everyone laughs when they hear his name. It's like such a human name. It's like Richard, you know, or like a female dog being like Vivian, you know.
I guess Gobind Singh goes to school, so he may have heard that name before. My children don't really know the difference between quote unquote normal names and like the unusual names, you know,
because in Phoenix they were going to school with a lot of other kids with names like them.
Well, they homeschool, so the kids the kids they know are mostly from Gurdwara, our neighbors, you know. So they
sweet.
You heard the name Ryan before?
That's funny. Yeah, Gobind Singh he's gone to regular school for several years now, and it really works well for him. Actually, he was in a private Montessori school for like kindergarten and grade one, or for preschool it worked fine, but for kindergarten and grade one he was in a private Montessori, and it was actually the same school that I went to when I was little. And you know, we love Montessori, and we love you know, we just love that way of learning, and we thought, oh, it was kind of just always like, well, of course we're going to put them in that kind of school. It was never really a question, as opposed to like a public school, right? And you know, so we had him in there, but then as he was finishing grade one, it was becoming very apparent that he was not liking it, and he was not doing very well with it. Like it was just, it was too much like self-initiated, like like you need to self-initiate your work a lot, and he's like such a socialite, and he has a very kind of, he's very very social, and he loves to be with his friends, and he's very very open and very like talkative, and so it was like, you know, they're in this classroom with like all their friends and sitting at tables, and they're like, okay, you have to get this much work done, go ahead.
And yeah,
he's just like talking to his friends.
Not for everyone. You
know? No, and you know, I think for some children it works amazingly well, and you know, I love the Montessori method and all the material and the handheld stuff, but it wasn't working for him. So we put him just in our the public school, just in our neighborhood here, and now he, you know, and he just like loves it, and it works way better for him, and like just everybody in the class kind of doing the same thing at the same time is really helpful for him. Uh-huh. Helps him to stay focused. And there are also a lot more kids in the school, and he has a lot of friends, and it's also just a great public school. I know not all public schools are graded equally, but we're lucky in the way that this particular school that we're in the catchment of is like fantastic. And he does really well, and they have great programs, and like, it's just, yeah. So he's really happy there. And
that's cool. Yeah. It's nice that there's variety, because obviously not one thing is going to work for every child. So.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Totally. It's a nice thing about living in a large progressive city. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's expensive as hell, but hey, we've got variety, which is really amazing. Yeah.
That's so cool. So you live in Vancouver, like the actual city?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Urban.
Oh, yeah. Well, speaking of the little one, he's here now. Hello, Hada. Hello, Mahada. Nice to see you. We can keep going. He'll just be here.
That's a great background noise. That's adorable.
Yes, you can have apricot juice. I'll get it for you.
So he's talking now. It's so sweet to hear.
Yes, he is. He talks a lot. Last night he said he walks to, you know how as long haired folks, we have like long hair. And so if we, let's just keep turning on the back. But you know, as long haired folks, when we comb our hair, it like creates like a little hair pile, like where we are. It's like, so, you know, it's kind of like a known term in our family. Like, okay, clean up your hair pile. And last night, like Bahadur, like kind of walked through my husband's hair pile. It's not like a huge hair pile. It's just like, you know, a little bit. And he walked through, but he noticed that there were like little hairs on, a couple little hairs on his feet. And he doesn't like that because he's very particular. And he was like, this is distracting. And so the armor, my husband took a couple tries to figure out what he was saying, but it turns out he was saying, this is distracting. And I was like, oh my God, how does he know that word? That was really funny.
I'm
getting it.
I'm the one who has the most hair in our house. I don't think I've ever used that term before. That's really cute to me. Because my Petty Mender, my husband, he doesn't have very much hair. It's like down his, and then my two boys, it's taken them a while for their hair to grow.
Right.
Six and it's still very like fine and but yeah, some kids I've seen your
Moving
into it, and he has a good amount of hair.
Yeah. Yeah, he does have a good amount of hair. Yeah. Yes. Hey, that's genes for you, you never know. It's like the more European / like it's like the more northern your genes go. Oh, there's the other. The more northern your genes go, the like less hair you have.
yeah.
Right, and then the more south it goes, like all the way down to like, you know, like really far south, people have like lots of hair. Like, and even like in
trail.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if you think about Scandinavian people, they've got like sparse amounts of like thin red hair, right, or like blonde.
Yeah,
and then you go down to like, you know, like in like the Middle Eastern people or an Indian, like India and the Middle East, it's like just like bushy people, you know what I mean?
Yeah. The babies, like the Indian babies at Argonaut, I just can't even fathom the amount of hair they have sometimes coming out. My kids were bald for at least a year.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then some, it's true, and then some Indian babies are born with like full heads of hair.
Yeah.
It's beautiful, and I love how in the world right now, all the genes are all mixing, and everyone's just like, oh, I got some of these genes and some of that, and then you never know what you're going to get, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
What, you never know how your children are going to be, and yeah.
Yeah, totally. Really cool. There's a whole blending going on, which makes the whole idea of oneness seem a lot more, like, apparent, you know?
Oh, yeah, totally. It's kind of like physically showing us what is already a reality.
Yeah.
And that you know, people in the world try and like reject and say it's not true, but like, well, you know what? It's true. Look.
Yeah.
Look at all the humans. Look at the way humans are evolving.
Yeah. Yeah, I think those gene tests really illuminated a lot for people. You know, when they thought, "Oh, I'm just white." And then they get their DNA results back and it's like, "Oh, wow." That doesn't exist. You know.
Yeah, exactly. That's true. Yeah, I love that. I totally feel that that the world is just driving closer and closer towards the center, you know, of unity and in all aspects, you know. And all the truth is all coming to the surface, and any things that are you know, any kind of all the truth is coming up and coming out, and all the like pain and all the sadness and all the anger and all the responses to all the truth that's coming up is like, you know, it's like it's necessary, it's good, because the truth will set us free and bring us closer toward, you know, the center of who we all are. Even all the trauma and all the everything, it just brings us more toward it. It's like in all the crazy, what I mean is like facing it rather than just sweeping stuff under the rug or saying that this is good, like saying that, like rather than just sweeping stuff under the rug, bringing it all forward and facing it and standing in that truth just allows us to move forward, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess when you're facing it, you're realizing that there's nothing to be ashamed of. You're not feeling ashamed of your emotions or your pain or anything. And we're realizing,
yes,
we're also realizing that the things that we felt embarrassed about because we felt like, oh, this hadn't happened to anyone else. I mean, people are, thousands, millions of people are coming out and saying this happened, you know, this has happened to me.
Yeah. Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. And then dealing with that shame and realizing that that shame and that embarrassment that's been so harmful to our bodies or to our psyche as personally and in a macro scale, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like it's all that shame and guilt and embarrassment that people feel from whatever has happened to them or whatever, all the things, you know, it's like when all that comes up, and it's like then all that shame can be dissipated, and that shame and that guilt and all this stuff, it, in my opinion, like it kind of, shame when it's in the body and in, you know, it's when it's in one person's body, it's going to be in another person's body, and it kind of grows and grows and grows until it's like on a macro scale in society, you know. And I feel that shame is like a disease, and I feel that like what happens is like it kind of like eats up all the light, nice things inside. It just eats it up, you know, and it can like eat up all the good feelings and eat up all the everything, and just kind of pulls a person down into this darker spiral. And that I feel that in that darker spiral that shame has, you know, pulled people down into, I feel that shame is what breeds perversion, you know, and shame is what breeds like all the imbalances that then cause people to act in ways that are abusive and horrible. And then of course that makes their shame worse and traumatizes the people that they're doing it on to, you know, and then that person has a bunch of shame and embarrassment, and they're like, oh no, you know, they have their own whole thing that they then have to deal with, and they hide it, and they, you know, and it just grows like this dark, twisty disease, you know. And anyway, that was a little dark, but
yeah, no, that felt very uplifting. That was a good slant. I liked that.
Yeah,
it informs, I mean, we talk about kids, it informs the way that we want to talk to them about things, because, you know, when you reprimand your kid for doing something and you make them, you lead them to believe that they should feel ashamed for what they've done, you realize that that's not going to have the effect that you think you want.
Yeah, it's like we don't want to make them hate themselves. We just want them to learn the consequences of their action.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, I wrote that Facebook post before. I was just like reading this thing that Russell Brand had posted and saying like, you know, like so much of addiction and all these things. Oh, what was it? We should read it. Should I get it? Can you still hear me?
Yeah, maybe I can pull it. I can still hear you. Are you retrieving it?
Good. Yeah, I'm retrieving it.
Okay, yeah. As an aside, how amazing has it been to see Russell Brand flourish as a spiritual teacher? I find this journey just totally intriguing and wonderful.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love it. Yeah. So he said, cannabis isn't a gateway drug. Alcohol isn't a gateway drug. Nicotine isn't a gateway drug. caffeine isn't a gateway drug. Trauma is the gateway. Childhood abuse is the gateway. Molestation is the gateway. Neglect is the gateway. Drug abuse, violent behavior, hypersexuality, and self-harm are often symptoms, not the cause, of much bigger issues. Mm. And it almost always stems from a childhood filled with trauma, absent parents, and an abusive family. But most people are too busy laughing at the homeless and drug addicts to realize your own children could be in their shoes in 15 years.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's super powerful. And I read that on Facebook and I was like, oh my God, I hope I'm doing the best by my children. I hope I'm not like giving them trauma that they're then gonna, you know, like. So I of course posted that out of that feeling, which is maybe not the best choice, but I did. It's like, are there really, you know, like when I get mad at my son and I like, you know, like then, you know, traumatizing him forever.
And, oh my God, the pressure that we put on ourselves as parents.
I know. It's really intense, actually.
Yeah.
So and it was...
Oh, go ahead. Yeah, go on. For the first 2 years of Amr Dhunter's life, maybe a little bit less than that, I thought my sole job was to make sure that he was never upset. I drove myself nuts.
Oh, that's challenging. Good luck with that.
It's like, oh, no, because of that thought, like, oh my God, I'm going to permanently damage this child. He's going to think I don't love him. He's going to think he's not loved, you know. It was insane. So, but you know, it led me to discover other things. So,
mm-hmm. Well, it was really helpful that you responded to that post by saying basically like, you know, they come into their life to like experience life in all the like fullness that it is. And like, you know, it's like that it's, you know, they're, you can't protect them from everything. They're just going to experience what they experience. And, you know, it's like, they know that we're humans too. Mm-hmm. And we have to just be humans and like do our best. And it's like, it's impossible basically to protect them from all forms of pain and upset.
Yeah. And it's, nor would you be doing them a favor.
Exactly, because then they wouldn't know what the hell to do when they're out in the real world living life. And yeah, it's true. And you know, it's also, that was really helpful. And also other people said some stuff about wonderful woman, Tracy Golly from Calgary. She said, she wrote like, you know, it's important to understand what trauma actually is. And she said like, trauma is when you experience something like really big and painful and intense and it has like big effect on you and you don't process it. And it just sits there unprocessed and then it like festers there. And, but you know, if you experience something big and intense and painful and you're able to actually feel that you have a safe space to be in, to process it and to feel it and to move forward, and you're in an environment of trust and you have a safe space, then it doesn't become trauma. It just becomes part of your life and you're able to move forward. And I thought that was like really, really wise and helpful because it made me look at it differently. It was like, wasn't about like, oh, I got yelled at him this one time. And then, oh, I shouldn't. It was like, oh, I could have handled that better, you know, but I could have handled that better, but I didn't. I just was like too tired and too... I was tired and I was hungry and I just like yelled at him and I could have handled that better. And I was hoping that that wouldn't like, you know, harm him and cause him trauma. Right. Mm-hmm. But the way that she helped me to look at it is like, well, you know, like, you know, the important thing is that he feels like he can trust you and that he has a bond with you overall, not like mm-hmm. every single second, all of the time. Like, you know, if you're grumpy, it's like, it's okay if he knows you're grumpy, you know, but it's like that he feels like he has a home that is safe and that he feels that he's safe to express his feelings and talk about how he's feeling.
Yeah.
And that you will understand and that you're going to love him in all the ways that he's feeling, you know? And it's like, and just show him acceptance and show him love. And that providing that environment is what actually gives your children a chance to really be raised to be in their own best way, you know, not the lack of hard things, but the actual presence of trust and safety and love. Mm-hmm. So that was really, it was a really helpful, like, Facebook experience.
Thank you, Facebook.
Yes. It was good. Between what you said and what she said, it was like, that was really good. And also this other woman said, like, also keep in mind that don't actually confuse setting boundaries with being abusive, because that's not the same thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and it's like, as a parent, it's like, sometimes I find it's like difficult the way when we're very hard on ourselves, and sometimes we kind of are very hard on ourselves and put ourselves down for like what we've done or what we've said. And it's like, well, you know, it's like, it kind of made me look at it in a little more of a bigger picture. Like, okay, well, look at the situation where you raised your voice at him and you got angry. Not like I set a firm, nice, balanced boundary. I wish I did. I wish it was that. But no, it wasn't that. I got mad. You know what I mean? It's like, that's when I get angry at myself, because I'm like, oh, I shouldn't have gotten mad. I should never get angry.
Right.
It's like, if you're setting a boundary, it should just be with like calm, assertive, like totally balanced emotions, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, and I'm like, oh, well, if I ever am not doing that, if I'm ever getting angry and it's just out of being like mad, then I'm not a good parent. And that was kind of the challenge that I was facing.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, if I'm mad, if I'm getting mad, then therefore I'm not setting a boundary. I'm just being explosive and unbalanced.
Right.
And that was like, you know, that's the place where my shame was entering the equation. Because I'm like, oh no, I'm getting mad. That means I'm a terrible person, a terrible parent, because I can't have patience with my child all of the time. Mm-hmm. You know, like if I had patience, then I'd be able to set this firm boundary and not get super mad. You know what I mean? But the reality is that I'm a human being and I got pissed off. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, I'm tired, I'm hungry, I'm not feeling okay. I'm feeling kind of, you know, if I'm feeling kind of sick, feeling whatever. And then he comes and he's like, just, you know, poking me and doing this thing that's like really unhelpful, like really irritating me. Please, please stop that. Can you please stop that right now? I don't like that. Does it again. Please. I've asked you to stop. Can you please stop? Does it again. Does it again. Does it again. Does it again. Stop it. You know? And like, that's when I get really mad. And it's like, and then he'll listen, but then he'll be all like, oh, I'm sorry. You know? And it's that getting mad thing. And it, I kind of, when this woman, my other friend on Facebook said, you know, make sure you're not confusing setting boundaries with being abusive. It's like, mm-hmm. You know what? That's right. Just because you're getting mad doesn't mean that you're being abusive.
Right.
And
I doubt Russell Brand was referring to that particular interaction. Yes,
I totally agree with you. I'm sure he was not. Yeah. But it opened up this opportunity of learning for me, because it was like, you know, it kind of, I wasn't really understanding, and it made me look at it in a different way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm glad you got nice advice from Facebook that says about the sorts of people who read your posts, I guess.
Totally. It wasn't from Facebook. That would be weird if there was that good advice from Facebook itself. But yes, from the people that are in my general community on Facebook. Yes.
Yeah. 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 Oh yeah. Well, that would be, can you imagine? That would be really creepy. If the CEO of Facebook, I noticed your post.
Just want to tell you, here's the answer to all of this. I'd be like, wow.
We don't have the answer for everything, but we do happen to have the answer for this one.
Yes. Oh, that'd be funny. It's like, is God just sitting at the helm of Facebook?
Oh, God is Facebook, don't you know?
Yes. Well, hey, God is everything, right?
That's right. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's a perfect example of that,
all
actually.
All these reflections of, yeah, actually, I mean, social media is just incredible to me. The way you can access anyone at any time, almost, you know, who volunteers to be on it. It's just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. That's true. It's amazing. And it's like, it's very multifaceted because it's like, it allows you to experience like from the tip top, highest consciousness, most amazing, beautiful wisdom down to like, in just a few seconds, you could also experience the like bottom of the bottom, perversion, manipulation, most corrupt, horrible,
everything.
Disgusting crap. Like, you know, and you can experience everything in the spectrum in just like a few minutes if you wanted to search for that.
Right.
And, you know, and you could interact with any of those people at any time. And also those people are also choosing how they interact. So they could interact authentically or they could interact inauthentically. They could be who they could, like, you know, talk to you as who they really are, what they're really doing, or they could lie to you and you never know what's going on.
Right.
You know,
yeah. That's interesting about Instagram in particular, I think. Mm. Is like all the photos of, you know, here's this gorgeous shot from my vacation and this gorgeous shot from my, and you have really no idea. I mean, unless you really know the person, because I feel like I know a lot
that's
of
the other thing.
But you have no idea if they're having fun with that beautiful landscape or if they're, you know, just sort of trying to pretend they are or.
Totally. Yeah. There's this, oh my God, there's this photo that someone, speaking of social media, there's this photo that somebody posted on Facebook recently that totally cracked me up. And you may have seen it too, but it was this picture of this like woman and she's like looking out of what looks like her window. Uh-huh. She's like looking out of a window and at these like beautiful hills in the background. And it looks amazing. And you look like, it looks like she's like on some journey, like maybe in a little vehicle, like traversing the hills, like having her whole like internal journey and like going, you know, doing this whole thing, and that's what the picture looks like. And then the next photograph is zooms out, and it shows that she's just like sitting in like in the middle of a city somewhere, like just with a stool on her head, and she's like looking out like through like the gaps in the legs of the stool. And it's like, just that's such a perfect like picture example of that to me, because she wants everyone to think that that's what she's experiencing, but really she just set it up by putting a stool on her head.
Which is such an amazing evolution of our consciousness to me, that we like have a sense that it's important that we feel joyful, so the next thing we're going to try to do is try to convince other people that we're having a good time. You know,
yes.
Eventually I think we'll all get to actually feeling it, but maybe that's just like the next rung on the ladder for some people.
Right. Well, which ties really back into what we were talking about before, which is being honest really about how we are doing and having the courage to be vulnerable and actually talk about how we really are doing, because you know, that's where forward movement and actual healing lies. That's where the shame can be freed to evaporate and leave our bodies and leave our culture and our society, is when we can really be vulnerable, have the courage to be seen, you know, and what we're really,
And that can feel really scary.
Is this the scariest thing? Like, actually,
especially I find for the quote unquote spiritual people, because we don't really want people to see us as human. We feel like that maybe takes away from our spirituality or
our
credibility. Yeah.
You know, I was literally just talking to someone else about this morning, and it's like so important how like the difficulty in when the thing she was talking about, the like the horrible moment that happens sometimes when like spiritual leaders, it comes out like with spiritual leaders, like in ways that they have been abusing their power. And like and it's like, and I'm not referring to anyone specifically, because it's happened you know, to like so many spiritual leaders, it's like, you can't just be like, oh, it happened to this person, that person. It's like, well, yeah. No, it's like, it's super common that like, there'll be a spiritual leader and they'll abuse their power in some way. And then it'll get out and that person will be totally ruined. And it'll be like, everyone's like, oh, well, then it makes you a hypocrite. And it means that everything you ever offered was false because you did all these horrible things. Okay. And it's really difficult when people, I'll use as an example is Louis C.K. He's not a spiritual leader per se. But like,
well, who knows? Maybe that's where he's headed.
Yeah. I mean, he isn't, and he actually kind of is, you know, if you really look into what he says.
Yeah.
But like, you know, he's like a genius comedian, and he does the things that he talks about are like so actually deep and very spiritual and like so real and amazing. And it's like super profound. A lot of the things that he's actually saying, if you like really look into it, really listen to what he's saying, and it's like so honest and so real, and lots of people are really moved and like love what he's saying and love what he's doing. And then it came out that he was sexually inappropriate with women. Mm-hmm. And a lot of women came forward saying how he was sexually inappropriate with them, and it was an abuse of his power, and it was, you know, it totally was. He shouldn't have done that. That was really messed up, you know. And it got out, and it was like, you know, really, really harmed his reputation. Mm-hmm. And I think it's hard when people are like, well, but what he made me feel inside was so real, you know, like, mm-hmm. I laughed so hard and it was so real. And he talked about, you know, there are a lot, it's like, he talked about like men and women in this like really kind of real way. And some of the things he said are like really, I mean, a lot of them are really disrespectful and kind of like, but not even disrespectful. It's almost like he was respectful by being super crass. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how he is. But it was like, it's like, oh, I won't go see his shows anymore. I can't take him seriously anymore because now I know I did this bad thing.
Right.
And,
which is sort of how we handle ourselves, I guess. We're like, that's why we feel like we need to bury the quote unquote bad things that we've done, is because we're afraid that people are just going to write us off if they only knew.
Totally. It's like, I can't be a good person and a bad person at the same time.
Yeah.
And with spiritual leaders, it's like, if they deliver practices that have been real for people, and it's like, well, this is real to me. And now it's like, now if this leader is, has done something that I don't agree with, you know, how can what he brought be real? You know, how can both things exist at the same time? You know, how can the good and the bad exist at the same time? You know, I don't believe that they can, so I'm just going to write it off.
Right.
And, you know, I just honestly, as human beings, it's my opinion that we kind of have to just accept the fact that that we are all human, and in every human being, you know, great, amazing stuff and really kind of yucky wall stuff can exist at the same time. Yeah. Both things can exist at the same time. And that's just kind of part of being human, and that no person should, I think honestly, the answer to all that in my eyes is that no human being should be put onto a pedestal and seen as like a golden god, because they're just going to fall because they're human.
Totally. Yeah.
And, that there is absolutely so much to be revered in our life and in our world. And I think that sacredness and that beauty and that life with a capital L that we revere and that we bow to, is that I think that it exists amongst everything. Mm. You know, it exists like in our bodies and in our being. And we just have to navigate that gray area, you know? And it's like the choices we make it's like either bring us closer to love and we can act in a loving way with loving choices, or we can choose to not act in that way. And I think that what is born from those loving choices and that loving vibration ultimately grows into what is sacredness and what is timeless, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's really beautiful. It helped me when I realized that I could still learn from someone, even if I didn't consider them to be quote unquote perfect, you know, because I would
yeah.
find people to learn from, and then I would get disappointed about their humanness. And I would say, I would do the yes. same thing. I would go through that. I'd be like, oh, well, that's silly. But if you do that, you're going to be in this cycle of discounting everything. But when you can
exactly
you can get so much good from the Louis C.K.'s of the world, you know.
Totally. I mean, like I've learned more from Louis C.K. than I've learned from a lot of yoga practicing people, I must say. And you know, it's like, I'm not saying I haven't learned a lot from a lot yeah. of yogis, for sure I've learned a lot from a lot of yogis, but I mean in certain situations I'm like, but Louis C.K. said this one thing. You know, and this other thing that this yogi person said didn't really apply to the situation very well, so
comedians are super tapped in sometimes. I mean, they have to have a lot of resilience in order to do what they do. Mm-hmm. Like they're very mm-hmm. They've had to overcome
big time
and really see themselves in a different way than maybe they're being treated a lot of the time, which is a very powerful spiritual
yes practice. Totally. It's totally humbling.
Yeah.
Totally humbling. Cause yeah, it's like you have to like make fun of yourself in like an authentic, real way.
Yeah. You know? And then like get booed off stage, but also feel like you're worthy of telling jokes. You know?
Right. Totally. And also get booed off stage and tell the truth a lot of the time. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's true. And still keep doing it. It's true. It's a powerful path being a comedian, I must say.
Yeah. It's not mine.
Yeah. It's not mine either, but you know, it's like, you have to also be extremely intelligent, like and mm-hmm. super quick thinking.
Yeah.
Which is like, you know, that's really, really hard. I don't think I have the wherewithal for that. Yeah.
Do people laugh yeah. in your live performances sometimes when you talk about things? I think they do. Right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Sometimes
oh,
you
yeah.
say cute things that people will laugh at.
Oh, yeah. People like it. But honestly, I'll tell you what. I've had both experiences. For the most part, people laugh and they're like, they find it endearing. And, you know, I'll just, you know, because I'll just be saying stuff that I think and, you know, just in whatever, in the way that I want to say it. And, you know... But then I've also had people be like, you're being irreverent and disrespectful and please, oh, like, you're not treating the teachings with like the reverence that they deserve. I'm like, you mean like me being honest and kind of goofy? And it's, you know, and it's like, so, you know, everyone's entitled to their opinion and sure. that's not my responsibility. I've learned. That was a hard lesson to learn though. It was very hard. I felt very sad and rejected at first.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, what if I'm being irreverent? And oh my God, like, you know, but then at some point I was just like, oh, it's not my responsibility. And my responsibility is to just do my best. And like, you know, it's like, it's not about what I'm doing. It's not about what I'm doing. It's about what is being given to the people. That's the way I feel mm-hmm. when offering any kind of, you know, I really relate to the sacredness of, you know, the Shabad Guru, of the mantra and of all the things that, and of all, and all the yoga and all the sacred teachings and the sacred vibration that we offer. I really relate to it as medicine, mm-hmm. as sacred, sacred medicine. And, you know, it's like my prayer always, whenever delivering any of that sacred medicine to people, is like, you know, they're trusting me to just give that to them, you know? And it's like, it's always my prayer to just exist for the medicine, you know, to use me in whatever way is best, mm-hmm. you know, and use my personality and my presence and my body and my voice and my presence in whatever way is best to just give, to bring that medicine to life in this moment and to like, and to deliver this experience to the people that are there, including myself, you know, so that we can all be healed together and all come together in true unity, you know? And it's like,
I just find that that's my prayer to make, you know, and once I've made that prayer, it's just like, well, I'm just doing my best to do that, and I'm who I am, so I'm going to do it my way, you know, and it's like, hopefully the way that I offer it is like of the utmost service, and if people, some people react to that and don't like it and don't feel that they're vibrant with it, then that's okay. They can just walk away and do something else.
Yeah. Or realize why it's bothering them so much.
Right. Or do that. That's ideal. That's ideal. But then the reality is that the people that it touches, thank God it touches them. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. That's the point. It's about who it does touch, not who it doesn't touch.
Totally. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about who it does touch. I like that. It's just why the amount of people that you chant for is never important, I think.
Yeah, it's true. It's so true. And actually when I was with Sonatam the other night, I was telling the audience how, like, you know, I've known Sonatam since forever and seen her chant in very many situations and circumstances, and I've seen her chant in a room with three people or in a room with 2,000 people, and it's exactly the same. Like, she shows up in exactly the same way. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's what is beautiful about the medicine, is that that's just the beyond the ego. Yeah. That's just what happens, is it's about what it is and who it does touch, not about what it isn't and what we're afraid of it not being.
Right. You know? And the first person that it's going to touch is her, is Sonata, you know, or if you're changing you.
Exactly. Exactly. And why do you think we all keep doing what we're doing? Right. Yeah.
Well, beautiful. I'm so glad that you took time out of your wonderfully busy schedule to chat with me. I know that this will
it's my pleasure
to a lot of people who listen to it, because that was very special. And
I'm so glad. I'm glad too. Thank you for inviting me. It's nice to actually like talk to you.
That's my ulterior motive in all this, actually. Is that I just get an excuse to catch up with people that I like.
Hey, it works for me. I like it.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Well, say hi to your beautiful family, and I will talk to you soon, I hope.
Yes, I hope. All right, I'll say hi to them. And also, likewise, when you get back to your family from your tour, say hi to them too. Are you back already, or are you?
Yeah, I'm back. I'm about to leave in 7 days, actually, to go to the East Coast, but I'm here.
Oh, okay. Right now, okay, nice. Yeah, give them a hug for me, all three of them.
I will.
Those boys. Okay, bye.
All right, Sanam.
Bye. Sanam.